It's We Talk Comics. It's episode number 73, The Jump On Point. Actually, you can jump on any time on any of our points. That sounds dirty, guys, doesn't it? I don't know if that came out the way I wanted it to.
You're the master of the single.
Right.
You're the master of the single entendre, though.
Not the single. I can triple entendre. Thank you. All right, we're going to jump on here. I'm Mo. And the other guys are going to go around the room and go introduce themselves with the worst Cockney accents they probably can. Chris. Well, I didn't get to do Ozzy Osbourne, so I figured this would be the Cockney accent show. Go ahead, Chris. Oh, you see, oh, what are you doing there?
That accent was so bad you've made us forget how to do a Cockney accent. I actually don't know what it's supposed to sound like now.
This is the Cockney accent, is what I say it is. Yeah. I watched The Limey this week. That's my mistake. You've watched The Limey, you're going to want to talk Cockney.
I've watched The Limey several times, never wanted to do that.
All right, well, that's Chris. That's Keith. They're not going to talk Cockney. Chris, one of you talk Cockney. Just one of you. Come on. Chris? Keith? Keith?
I'm out. I'll have to come back to it.
Oh, you do that.
You bring it out of my head.
Perfect. All right. Well, anyways,
we got to start planning these in advance. Oh, God, that was the worst idea ever.
I don't know. Is it really a worse idea than an entire show doing trivia? Anyways, we're back again. Like I say, it's the Jump On Point. But before we do that, we're going to do the news. Keith is the guy who does the news, so he'll introduce the news as well as introduce our proud news sponsor, somebody I've personally heard of.
That's right. The news is sponsored by Comicosity, home of my column, Read Between the Lines, where last week I took a look at the odds of who the new Batwing was, and I was right.
Oh, you got it?
Yeah, I'm not going to spoil it. I was mostly right.
Really?
But
interesting.
I gave the best odds to a type of character. It is that type of character.
Okay, you didn't actually see that character, because I remember when this character came around, I went, oh yeah, that is somebody sort of familiar, but not.
Yes, I
we'll get there. We'll get there later.
Yeah.
When we do the reviews.
Yeah. Maybe a spoiler heads up now that when we get to the reviews, we will spoil Batwing. So if you haven't read Batwing.
Yeah.
We'll sit here quietly for 5 minutes while you read Batwing.
So, well, actually, we won't sit here quietly for 5 minutes. We'll spend 5 minutes trying to get Chris to talk in a Cockney accent.
That does sound like better podcast.
So anyways,
thank you to Comicosity. Thank you to Comicosity. Now I'm hitting Comicosity here for an announcement of a new
series. For the weekly news with Cub Reporter K?
That's correct. The weekly news with me, Cub Reporter K. All right, in July, the Superior Foes of Spider-Man, Nick Spencer and Steve Lieber. This team will be made up of, let's see if I can actually recognize them from the picture. That looks like Shocker. I'm going to have to find a list. It is a team of...
That's why you're the professional reporter.
We've got Boomerang, Shocker, Speed Demon, The Beetle, and Overdrive. Overdrive's not one I'm familiar with.
They're really going with the A-listers.
they take a cue from the Superior Spider-Man and get upgraded for a new era of evil.
Now, I got to ask you this. Personally, the Beetle, to me, Iron Man foe, not a Spider-Man foe. Opinions?
Spider-Man foe, but he was a good guy last time I looked. He was in Thunderbolts. They just erased the Thunderbolts from continuity, haven't they?
This version of
the new Thunderbolts was really, really good, right, Keith?
This version of the Beatles of the Beetle seems a bit more hourglass than the beetle I'm familiar with. This looks like a new version of the character, so I don't know where this one comes from.
Female, you're suggesting?
This is a female character, yeah, correct. So I don't know
now, where this one's from. But you never answered the question, Iron Man or Spider-Man villain?
I would say Iron Man, but that's because the greatest Iron Man run to me is Armor Wars. So that's really where I know, the only place I know the character from.
But he's in only like one issue of Armor Wars.
Doesn't matter. It's the greatest Iron Man run ever.
Name me the issue of Spider-Man he's been in.
Every book in the 70s.
No.
Spider-Man fought him a lot.
No, Spider-Man didn't. I'm telling you, he fought Iron Man definitely more. I'm sure that's where he first showed up. In fact, right now, while we're on this and Keith continues to do the news, I'm going to look up the Beetle and Marvel.
In the cartoon.
Was he? He was not.
I think he was in the 66 cartoon. Or 62.
No, you're thinking of Scorpion.
I think Beetle was there too.
No, he definitely was not.
I do not. I think he might have been in the 90s version, but I don't think he was in that.
Oh, he was definitely in the 90s version, but I don't think that counts either.
All right. In other news, IDW is announcing a Rocketeer Spirit crossover, written by Mark Waid, art by Paul Smith. Kind of a neat idea.
I'm sorry, repeat it again, because I was too busy figure out where the Beetle came from.
So don't hit the Wikipedia for the Beatles. That'll take you in a whole different direction.
No, I know.
They were definitely around in 1966, but they were also not in the Spider-Man cartoon.
Yeah, and how many, who'd they ever beat?
We've got a four-issue miniseries, The Rocketeer and the Spirit.
That'd be great.
July, Mark Waid writing.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Well, that'll be great until they can get a bigger writer.
Like, it's some talent behind that.
Sorry, I didn't think Waid was a huge name. I thought he was just a consummate workman.
All right.
Oh, good times.
Go back and listen to the last episode. It'll make more sense to you if you haven't listened to it.
We've got a teaser image from Curtis Weep for a new project. This is a book that the teaser is what looks like an elf girl, and it says Betty.
You can't repeat what it says.
Tequila.
We try and keep this show PG.
Tequila, vodka, and two magic mushrooms. They call it the Betty.
Yeah, there was another one out there that contained an F-bomb or two. There was also a teaser. So.
Oh, weeb.
Da-na-na-na-na-na.
All right, that was everything I have for news. What's the wrap up on the Beetle?
Right now I'm seeing him in Iron Man Lost Civil War. He was in the his first appearance was against the Thing and Human Torch.
Oh.
So he's a Fantastic Four villain. Apparently, but it was in like Strange Tales or something. He was in the Spider-Man and His Amazing Friends cartoon. And in the Marvel's Action Hour. So maybe that's where you got it confused. The X-Men and Spider-Man cartoons. But he has had more appearances in Iron Man books than in Spider-Man books.
Which one was the Action Hour?
The Action Hour was an early 90s Marvel. Wasn't it?
No. That was when they combined Spider-Man and His Amazing Friends with the Hulk. They had two half-hour blocks.
Yeah, so I said early 90s.
No, it'd be earlier than that.
That was 80s. Amazing Friends, that was where Firestar and Ice.
Well, this is what they're saying, that this is part of Iron Man, the animated series, season one.
Right.
And that it was a combination of that and some other show.
Oh, that'd be Iron Man and Fantastic Four.
Yeah, that was
That was... that Iron Man cartoon had an adaptation of the Armor Wars.
That's right.
Yeah, I didn't like the series overall, but that was a really good arc. because it is such a great story.
Well, yeah, but also, and I think we've already used this music before, but it had great music. That series had great, everything else sucked, but the music at the beginning was awesome. I am Iron Man. And then he's like hitting iron. Anyways.
The second season of that, when they actually changed the animation, got rid of Force Works, is actually watchable. The Force Works stuff is pretty badly animated.
Oh, Force Works, you were just so terrible.
Yeah, first issue was awesome.
What was the gimmick cover on number one? Anytime a 90s comic comes up from Marvel, that is the first thing I think of is, I know it had a gimmick cover.
What was the gimmick comic? I can't remember if it was... I think it was a pop-up.
It had one of the weird ones. It had one of the really strange...
Or a cutout or something. Didn't it have a cutout, maybe?
I don't think it was a cutout.
I guarantee it had a gimmick cover. It was the 90s.
Oh, absolutely.
And it had a newsstand copy for cover price, and then the gimmick cover, which was like $4.50.
Yeah, and it was where it looks like it might have just been a foil cover, from what I can see. But
welcome
I think
to,
that might have been like
welcome
the first...
to We Talk What We Look Up on Wikipedia.
Well, this is Google Images.
Join us as we search things on the internet.
They killed Wonder Man. They killed Wonder Man in that first issue, but I just remember it because I think that was the first time I ever saw Abnett and Lanning.
Really?
As a team. I believe so. And issue one was great when they killed Iron Man, and the concept of, we're not going to sit back and wait for somebody to do something bad. We're going to get them before they do something bad if their intentions were kind of interesting. And I think in some ways kind of laid the groundwork for some of the Civil War type Iron Man character that came later. So I think there's some interesting stuff with Force Works, but then you have to also keep in mind that it sucked. So you have to balance all this out by that.
Yeah, no, I'm looking at the cover right now to Force Works, and it was just a gatefold.
Oh, gatefold.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, gatefold. That's what it was. Yeah. All right. What else can we
look at? One of the few gimmick covers we still have.
Oh, the 90s.
So, is there anything else we're going to look up on the internet, guys? Got anything else?
No, yeah. I'm good. Should we go to our song? I'm good.
Come on, let's come up with something.
If you're tweeting things, if you're listening at home, please tweet us some things you've looked up on the internet. It's the internet's got a lot of pages, and I've only seen most of them.
Yeah. And
Chris is just now finding out that there are pages without porn. So he's
exciting adventure.
A whole new world for him.
All newsmen drink, Jennifer. That's the kind of rough and tumble guys we are.
All right. Let's move on to our topic this week.
All right, Keith. This topic was your brainchild. So why don't you kind of explain the concept a little bit?
All right. Well, in the Wii Views, for ages and ages, we have pretty much entirely done number ones. We occasionally do... a jump on issue. This week we do have Batwing number 19, which is certainly a jump on issue, being marketed as that. And every once in a while we'll do a special or a graphic novel, but primarily it's number ones. So that means that often we're looking at, is this book a new reader friendly? Do you get everything in this book that you need to be able to judge where this book's going to be going? Does it engage you enough to want to follow along with it? What are the aspects? And this kind of has brought up, as we've argued a couple of times over, whether one of us has thought a book is new reader friendly enough or not. Last week we got a bit heated when we were talking about Guardians of the Galaxy, for example. So that brought me to the idea of, what are the pieces that we really need to, that someone needs to check off on their first issue to really stick the landing on a debut? And I don't think it's as simple as laying out everything that the series is going to be and where it's going to go, because, you know, what's the point of reading if you know from the beginning where it's going to be in 20 issues? But at the same time, there's something in there of I should have some idea of the feel of the book or what this is going to be like, you know, tonally. If the first issue seems like a ground floor, what do they call it, street level detective book, and the next issue is in space, then clearly there's something wrong with the way the book's being set up. So what are those pieces? What are, if we can get to a list of, you know, five things that you need in your jump on point to make it work, what are those things?
I think there's a couple ways we can go with this. So basically this is, like you said, what we're going to try and do is just have a discussion, and you guys are going to get to listen in as we try and figure out what are the things that are needed to do to make a good jump on point for people. Like I say, I think there's a couple ways we can go look at this. Number one, we can talk about some of the most successful books that we read that were jump on points and try and figure out what the, what the common thread might be. Another thing that we could do here is we could start off by saying some of the things that we think they do wrong and kind of eliminate those. So what do you think, guys? Okay. Where do you want to go with it?
I think for me, I'm thinking wrong is a way to start this off, just to get an idea. And one book comes to mind. Mo, you're a huge fan of the entire Valiant universe.
Sure.
Personally, I thought one of the worst jump on points, and I'm not talking quality of books or anything there. Actually, I believe there was worse Valiant books in the number ones, but for jump on points, I thought Exo Man of War was a horrible jump on point.
See, it's kind of interesting though you say that, Crystal, because
they're rehashing the origin right off the bat, and I hate origins in in number ones. We don't need to start there. We could have started him in this suit, and, you know, issue 5, we could have done a flashback some of this stuff. You could have something.
And I'm going to tell you this only, you couldn't have. And the reason you couldn't have, and if you have read the entire series, would you understand this? Because of how it's built to the current thing right now, to the current Planet Death major event occurring within it, they couldn't have. It had to go this way for the long-term storyline. And it did have a long-term storyline that needed to start there and to a crescendo, which is what we're seeing right now. So actually, I do understand what you're saying, though. But again, I don't think that was a great jump on point, really, ideally. I think it's a great series, and Valiant is doing the good books, but I don't know if it was an excellent jump on point but you have to keep in mind, again, that was an interesting thing. They weren't launching just that book. They were launching an entire universe, and they had to really, and you can't assume that anybody has ever heard of the character because he had been gone for so long. There's so many new readers. You didn't want an origin story. They had to do that. I think they had to go about it that way. But again, I understand what you're saying. I don't know. But again, I think a lot of people, if they were to get to a book and they pick it up and the guy's already in his uniform and he's running around and he's doing a bunch of things and they don't find out for 5 issues why. So I think in this day and age, I think we're more used to that. I mean, I remember that was one of the things that was intriguing about, say, Shadowhawk in the day, was we saw him in the suit and we didn't find out his origin until way down the road. Now, when we found it out, it was disappointing, but it was the intrigue and the mystery. But I think nowadays people kind of expect things, I don't know, spoon-fed to them more. Is that the right way to put it? It's like how they put the recap of everything that's happened in the book at the beginning now.
Well, it's funny, Mo, because it's something that we do talk about quite a lot when we get into these books, and it's a challenge of the way the books are that generally comics are structured now. You're saying that Exo was building to something larger, so that necessitates the way the first issue is structured. And I would agree, and I think that that was the case with quite a few of the Valiant books. I think they worked out a longer plan than I've seen on some other books.
What a strange thing.
The problem with that, though, is something that we've talked about on the show before. How long, as someone who's not really invested, how long do I give a try to see if it's going to pay off in 4 issues or 6 issues? And it's a criticism that we've leveled at Brett for DC and it's been leveled at me for Marvel, is that, you know, in both of those cases, we've probably got 1 issue to really get a good chunk of meat. And if it doesn't happen enough in that first issue, I'm not going to stick around for 6 to see if that pays off in the longer story.
Yeah, I think Exo definitely suffered from that. Absolutely. I was curious enough with what they were going to do with the universe in total that I decided to invest in it early. But again, it comes down to, I mean, we're talking about this, even when you talk, even when you mention this, you're going to have, how much are you going to be invested? I can tell you how many times I got a book because a creator was on it and loved it. And as soon as that creator left, I didn't stick around for that character. The challenge, I think, nowadays that a lot of publishers and the creators have is making it so that people are invested in the characters and not in their work. And I don't know that they necessarily successfully do that. So because of that, I think that just changes the dynamic of all of what we're talking about here. Does that make sense?
Yeah, I think it's a big challenge, in particular with, I'm looking at some of the DC books that are swapping around creators right now. Batwing just got a new creative team. Swamp Thing gets a new creative team this month. We've just heard, unfortunately, that Thunderbolts will be getting a new creative team in just a few issues.
The death nail.
Dylan has already left the book, and Daniel Way will be leaving in a few issues. But the person coming in is fantastic. Now, Chris, who has already felt burned on this book, is he going to be wanting to try a new writer at number 12? And am I going to want to stay with a new writer when I've liked what's been going on? I didn't want it to change. If it's a new writer, probably it's going to change tone. So, I mean, it's kind of the double-edged sword of where we're at now, that we are starting to follow creators as opposed to following characters.
Yeah, you would think, I mean, that's the times I've read a character for 30 or 40 issues because the creator's on it, really loved it. And I thought I loved the character, but I don't even give it a chance when the creator leaves. I'm immediately gone. Because they've switched.
I don't love the character.
I love the creator and what he did with the character. And that, I think that's a, I think that's, I don't think I'm alone in feeling this way nowadays. And I don't know why that is, because it certainly wasn't the way I always was.
I'm going to use Winter Soldier as an example here. This is the way not to do it. Brubaker has a tremendous run, right? Or just finished a tremendous run on Winter Soldier. Now, they've switched creative teams, and they've tried to sort of sneak it under the radar. There is no difference in tone. It is definitely not written as well, but they didn't make a big deal of it and tried to sneak it past me like I'm some kind of idiot. Really, I would have preferred, if you're going to get a new writer, get a new style, a new take, but this is just more of the same. I don't want a guy just aping what has gone before. I want something new. And usually I'll give them 1 issue to draw me back in when they change creative teams. And I don't think they can do that if you're just trying to copy the guy who's gone before.
It's hard to say if 1 issue is even fair to with anything, but I can tell you, I mean, I think one of the problems is that the creators try and make them. Do the creators try and make themselves bigger than the book? Do they try and make themselves the stars of the book instead of the characters the stars of the book? Does it start with that? I mean, I don't know if we're getting off topic here, but I mean, I think it's fascinating the way we're discussing this. So I'm okay with it, but I do think it's like, Is that a possibility that the creators are making themselves a bigger star than the character themselves?
Well, I want to get back to what Chris was saying, because Brubaker was writing two books, and the two books he left handled that change entirely different, and people have complained about both of them. And they could not have
been... America, I think they did that one right.
See, and most people don't, and what I... The word on the street and inside the echo chamber of Twitter is very negative.
Poop.
It's very negative on where Captain America went, because it is so jarring. I mean, I also really like what's happening on Captain America because it's entirely different. I like that they didn't try to keep the tone going, that they went off in this radically other different direction from what had happened. But I
don't know that it always was this way, though. I mean, for years, when a different person came on Spider-Man and I was a kid, I wouldn't notice, because the Spider-Man character was the template, not the writing style was the template, for good or for bad.
Well, the old style on these things used to be, and it's the way that Grant Morrison still talks about it. It's the reason why Damian's dead, is that the old style is that when you had a long run like that, your job at the end was to put the toys back in the box and return the status quo to more or less where you got it. And that's what we're getting with, Grant Morrison's wrapping up his big run. Yes, there's the angst of, a lost child, but there's no extra character. He's putting things back to where
that not character that was way. When he was smiling and seemed happy as hell. But hey, we'll get there. I was thinking that as I'm reading it. I'm like, didn't this guy just lose a child? Anyways.
It's only a couple more months and no character will remember that Damian ever existed. That used to be the style. It used to be like, there might be gigantic things like the death of Gwen Stacy, for example, but when you got to the end of your run, your job was to wrap everything up, close up all your plot lines, and hand it to the next guy, more or less intact. The Fantastic Four would be back to the original four characters, and...
Just back to the original four characters, but regardless, during the entire run, the personality of the characters, creator to creator, were... the same. Every now and then you'd get somebody who would evolve a character like Miller did with Daredevil. But like I say, I mean, my Spider-Man was a down on his luck kid who always had a funny quip as Spider-Man and fought against the poor luck that always seemed to get to him. And that was consistent no matter who was writing him for years. And then it became, I want a fresh take. I'm going to reinvent the character every time. And then when I reinvent it, somebody else has to get reinvented. And then they don't like what I reinvented it, so somebody else has reinvented it. And I think this is one of the reasons why it is difficult for a jump on point. I think this is one of the things why I go to Marvel now that I found so jarring, is because I haven't read as much Marvel over the last 7 years or so. Is so many of these characters are just not familiar to me. I mean, Hawkeye has been changed so much that it's tough for me to find a jump on point for the character when he's not a familiar person to me anymore.
But now, I mean, we're really in a time of the comic readers where we complain if the status quo stays for too long. I mean, they constantly reset it to something fairly familiar.
But can't we tell good stories without changing the cursed personality and everything about the character, the core?
There's lots of good stories out there.
I'm not saying there isn't.
I'd say in some cases, no. I mean, I think of some of the great runs of comics over the years. They all involve challenging the character and changing status quo. I mean, Green Arrow, Longbow Hunters, Daredevil. Burns Fantastic Four, they all involve massive changes to what was going on in those books. What happens is that at the end, the editor says, you got to tidy this back up.
Okay, not the Fantastic Four. I mean, I'll say this. I think as far as the personalities of the character, I don't think a lot changed. I think it just became, we delved into the personalities more. We got to know them better. The interesting storylines were made, but the personalities themselves didn't change.
Except that She-Hulk is one of the members for almost his whole run.
Yeah, but that doesn't matter. She-Hulk's personality was the same, though, as it had been prior. The Thing's character, when he did show up, he was the same character. He just wasn't a member of the team. So, I mean, you're not changing the personalities, the dynamics. You're changing the storyline and the members, but that's not what I'm talking about here. You know what I mean? There is a difference.
And maybe that's the creator thing that you're talking about, that
I think so.
That there is that level of, you know, when a certain writer writes a character, you know, editorial used to be more heavy-handed with that stuff, with rewriting dialogue, etc. And in general, it should be seen as a good thing that there's variety. It can be challenging. I mean, certainly, some of the stuff with DC trying to rationalize and trying to figure out how Wonder Woman in Wonder Woman versus Wonder Woman in Justice League, or Hal Jordan in Justice League versus Green Lantern, it can be, and you know, Wolverine is a mess right now. He's so different from book to book. In some, he's, you know, got flowers in his hair, and in some, he's killing everyone he walks past. Like, there's no continuity, and there's no level to that character right now of who he is book to book.
He's really going through an interesting transformation. I'm still not loving the character, but I think in two, three years, sorry?
I don't know that it's even a transformation so much as that it's that there's such – Marvel seems to me to have largely – like they've given up on continuity to a large degree. It feels – that's how I feel, book to book and character to character.
I think some writers for Wolverine, they now see him as the elder statesman, the teacher, as opposed to the Rogue, the Maverick. So – yeah, I think he's evolving in an interesting way, and I don't think editorial has quite glommed on that, you know, we need to go one direction or the other.
You'll have a month where he is the elder statesman trying to make his vision of Professor X's dream for the school, the Jean Grey school, in one book, and in the next book I read, he has lines like, you know, some guys just need killing. Like, there's no pattern anymore to that character, and that's,
I remember it, you know what, it was years, it was many, many years ago, I remember picking up I was obviously a regular reader of Peter David's run on the Incredible Hulk, and Peter David came and took the Abomination from being just this very a brutish C-level character into being a far more interesting character with far more levels and far more shades of gray, and a poetic side to him, but still a dangerous villain, and you know, gave him a purpose and everything. And I'm becoming a big fan of the character. And then picking up, because for two reasons, seeing that Namor was fighting the Abomination in his own book, I remember picking up this story because two reasons. Number one, it was Abomination, who I'd become a fan of, and Jay Lee was doing the art on Namor, picking it up, and they're going to fight underwater. And the whole issue, there's not one part of his personality that Peter David had created. And at this point, it'd been years that this had been this Abomination, and instead of being, and it was back to being the Brute. And I thought, this is just poor writing. This is poor editing. This is the opposite of what it should be. There should be a tightness. And I feel like Marvel has gone, they go through stages, and DC goes through stages where they're on top of this. And then it just gets too big, or they get too lazy, or they get distracted. And I feel like both companies, to a large degree, are kind of at that right now. DC should have, with their 52, being able to tighten it up some, and they probably have some. Marvel certainly, I thought they were going to with the Marvel Now, but I haven't sensed it. So again, it becomes, and it does come back to the jumping on point, though. I mean, if characters are inconsistent in how they behave book to book, especially if they're in Wolverine and they're in 72,000 books, Batman, at least, say one thing, he's generally been consistent book to book. I mean, he's in 72,493.
I think you come back to the Batmite argument. There are different versions of all these characters. It all depends whether you need a consistent universe or not. One of my favorite villains of all time is Solomon Grundy. He's never been portrayed the same way twice. They seem to press the reset button on him constantly.
I just got to bring this up just because you mentioned Solomon Grundy. The Injustice video game, I was looking at the preview on my Xbox, and it's funny because they list, you know, Marvel's biggest characters, Superman, Batman, Wonder Woman, Solomon Grundy. No Flash, no Green Lantern, no Joker. No, you know, Doomsday even, Solomon Grundy. I was like, really? Anyway, sorry, go ahead. One of these things is not like the other. One of these things does not belong.
I almost wore my Solomon Grundy t-shirt tonight. Oh, wait, there's no such thing as a Solomon Grundy t-shirt.
If there was, you'd have three buys right here.
I'm just saying that's one of the beauties of comic books is looking at characters in a different light on a regular basis. I understand Mo's argument that he wants a consistent universe, but I like having four different Jokers that a writer can call upon.
Well, I think like,
is he going to be stabby stabby, which is actually my big problem with the way Joker is being portrayed right now in New 52. We only have one take on him, and this take, the route they're taking, doesn't have as many incarnations that I'd like. I'd like them to explore what else they can do with characters.
But you know what? It was established a long time ago, and this is largely thanks to Grant Morrison, that this is a character who redefines himself every day he wakes up. So therefore, I can buy into that because that actually fits with the character's continuity. It's not like something like, you know what? I'm loving Savage Wolverine, Frank Cho's work over there. But I've loved it because I can just go, this is a good storyline. This Wolverine is not like the Wolverine in this book, and he's not like the Wolverine in this book. And it's not in continuity in any way, shape, or form. It's just a storyline. I can enjoy it. And if I know and I've decided it is that, whether it is or isn't, because nobody's ever said, I've decided it is that because that's the only way it makes sense. And that way I can just enjoy it. And if I don't mind different versions of characters. That's what was nice about Elseworlds or What If or, you know, these type of things. Or even different universes. Ultimate Spider-Man didn't have to be like exactly like Spider-Man. But it's – you got to tell me what I'm getting into. I feel like I need to know. You know, otherwise I feel like it can be confusing because I can be feel like I'm not getting the character that I expected. And that's not why I made the purchase.
Well, there's a good point for jump-ons. That is what an issue one or a jump-on point should try to explain to a reader is what is the tone, who these characters are, because we're all bringing our own baggage. And you know what? If I open a Batman book and it has a little Batmite in the top corner or something, I know exactly what I'm getting.
I think this is something I liked about that the Alan Davis Wolverine was that it really set up fairly quickly in that book the focus would be he's an Avenger, he's playing by the rules, he's showing his card when the police turn up, he's not running away. They established a lot of that stuff really quickly, so I understood the version of Wolverine I'm getting. I mean, some of these characters are unbreakable. I mean, it's often said that Batman is an unbreakable character, that you can have 1,000 versions of this character, and they never mess up the core.
Yeah, you can make him a scary character. You can make him a James Bond character. You can make him a superhero character, and it all works because he's the Batman. On the other hand, I don't feel like you can do as many versions of Superman, for good or for bad, and make it work because there's an iconic core to the character that isn't as flexible.
No, I think with Superman, I think Superman comes down to really two core variations. Is he Clark Kent who dresses up as Superman, or is he Superman who dresses up as Clark Kent? Which one is the core of the character? And I think to me that is the only variation. And you know, I prefer the Clark Kent side, where he's, you know, an investigative reporter, and you could have whole stories with just Clark Kent. the version, you know, the silver, the kind of Bronze Age version and the current version of Superman, I can't imagine spending a whole issue with that version of Clark Kent because it's a disguise.
What version is the Christopher Reeve Superman? Because to me, that's the ultimate portrayal of Superman. That's the most heroic and human character possible.
I think that that character is, you know,
it doesn't necessarily fall into one of those two.
But he's, I mean,
because you can see elements of both.
Yeah, he's still, you know, in. I don't know. I guess he's more Superman. I guess, you know, I guess he's more the last child.
Is he when he gives up his powers to be with Lois?
But he does that selflessly because he's, you know, friggin' Superman.
And then gives it back, knowing means he can't be with her. Is that Superman or I guess that is Superman, but that feels like Clark Kent too.
It's all selfless again.
Yeah, I suppose.
He manages to be.
But that's why he's the ultimate character, because the character is so heroic that he just gets. There's a point. What is it? There's a point, or I think it is in Superman, where Christopher Reeve looks at her and says, "You know, you shouldn't smoke. It's bad for your health." And he's so sincere. Mm-hmm. You're just like a Superman. Like if I said that to somebody, people would go, screw you, you're an idiot. But Superman says that to you. He's like, you know, Superman is right. He's so sincere. He's just such a hero.
Such dude, a good that had man. Nothing to do with the smoking comment.
Pardon me?
That had nothing to do with the smoking comment.
What did? That he was pure?
That they told you to screw off.
Oh, okay. Yeah, I know you're right. I hear that.
You're an idiot. Like, that you should just assume that's a greeting.
Yeah, no, it usually is. But
all right, let's.
Anyways, recording?
Recording now.
All right, so the way I see it, right now we have one of five figured out. Tone. So tone needs to be set in the first issue. If we can figure out the other five here, I'll be impressed. What else do we need to do? I'll tell you one thing I don't think you need to do. And I think, again, you know, it seems to me like every jump on point now is when you have a creative team switch. Why does it have to be every time there's a creative team switch? Why can't there be jump on points prior to that? In fact, why can't there be single issue story arcs instead of everything having to be 15, 20 issues or at least four? Why can't there be just the occasional single issue story arcs? Because it felt to me like there was more of those at one time, and that made it more accessible to jump on a series.
Well, there's always been books that have just ongoing serialized arcs, or not—they're not even arcs at that point. They're just—it is a serial. You know, some comics. I made the observation recently that the reason I find a lot of Marvel, older Marvel stuff, not as interesting to me to reread, is that Marvel is essentially a soap opera. Marvel is structured as was for a long time structured as just continuous story.
Well, maybe, but I mean, you would have different villains in every, like you would have one villain who's pulling the strings behind the scenes, and there was a story arc going on, but you would have, you know, back to Spider-Man, you could pick up 10 issues and have 5 issues that had the Jackal and 5 issues that had a different villain. So yes, there was a long running story arc, but there was also single issues there, which sure they fit in continuity, but were also could be read by themselves.
Well, often if it stayed with creators, often what it would be 21 pages, say, of the main story, and then the last page would be a teaser of the next issue. That was, you know, Byrne structured almost his entire Fantastic Four like that. X-Men was always structured like that. That you could read, that the story could stand on its own, but then there'd be something at the end to still hook you to come back. I'm going to say that should be one of the five things that you need for your jump on point. Is it doesn't have to be a cliffhanger, but there should be something at the end to make you want to come back. It doesn't have to be continued. It doesn't have to be a cliffhanger. Cliffhangers help, but
I'll give you a fine example. When I remember reading reading the West Coast Avengers. I was reading it. It was good, but I wasn't probably going to come back to the next one. And then the last page, in wants the Thing, and he's joining the team in the last page. And it's like, oh, the Thing. I like the Thing. Let me see the next issue. I want to see how that works out. How's he going to be with the team? That's not a cliffhanger or to be continued, but it's just something that made me go, oh, there's
It's a tease for the next story arc.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That's what we're saying. That's what we like in an issue previous. And actually, this, I'm going to throw this point because it's sort of related. What I miss, and they still do it occasionally, but they don't do it as often, is in the first page, tell me how long a story arc is. I'm more apt to commit myself if I know how long I'm committing myself. I really miss those. DC used to be very good at this, going, okay, this is a five issue. This is one of five. They'd give an overall title to a story arc. It's like, okay, I'm going to.
It's funny. People complain about, you know, writing for the trade. And I think that's why they stopped doing it, is that, you know, that you hear that phrase all the time. Oh, they're just writing for the trade. But they used to call it miniseries within a series. DC did tons of that stuff where they would have a whole bunch of single issues in Batman or Superman, and then they would have part one of six. And, you know, Batman did that for ages. You know, Legends of the Dark Knight for years and years was structured entirely as miniseries within a series. They were all four or five or six issue arcs. And they would be labeled like that.
That could I could possibly like that because before digital, I was almost exclusively reading in trade. It just seemed easier because I could get a complete story arc. I'm more likely to try something if I know, okay, this is five issues. It's a limited series. I'll give it a chance rather than something that I don't know how long I'm in for. I'm more apt to drop it as soon as there's a story point that I go, oh my God, the Beetle. I hate that villain. I'm out.
Devil's advocate, though, from a marketing standpoint, if you saw Batwing this week and it said part four of six, would you have tried it?
No.
And there's the rub. Maybe that's why we don't see it anymore.
Yeah. You know, another thing, though, is a jump on point.
But you can't have jump on points every issue. Sorry.
You can't?
No, I don't think you should have. I really don't believe that every issue should be a jump on point. I think that's something we should say for three or four times. Oh, actually, two or three times a year.
But if you're somebody who's structured, say, a 20 issue story arc, should the only jump on point be issue one? I mean, even something like in television, somebody was saying to me, oh, the new season of Game of Thrones, you ever watched it? I said, no. They said, you should watch it tonight. I said, shouldn't I watch the previous years first? They go, definitely, don't watch tonight. Go start at season one, episode one. And it's like, okay, that's too much work. So where is the balance?
TV actually is a fantastic example of this because, soap operas ran for years and years, and they were always designed that you can just walk in and maybe it might take you two episodes, but you'd be able to pick up the gist within a couple episodes. Mm-hmm. And it is the positive, and like I only watch serialized TV. I only watch shows that are building a larger story. I have absolutely no interest in episodic television. I know other people that won't watch any serialized shows because
for me, I was the opposite. Yeah, I mean, I like an episode of Law and Order. I'm going to pick it up. I'm going to get an hour's worth of story structure that's familiar and that I like and that's well told, and I'll be done. And I appreciated that because I didn't have to invest.
And that's two radically different views of TV. And not one's not right and one's not wrong. It's it's that what I want is I want a character that gets developed and changes over the course of a longer story. I mean, my favorite shows of all time are Babylon 5, Buffy the Vampire Slayer, West Wing. Those are shows where they had long storylines and the characters evolved over the course of a long time. Law and Order is, like I was saying about old comics, the end of an episode of Law and Order, what you're supposed to do as a writer is pack everything back in a box so that the next guy starts fresh next week. So it's
just, and that was one of, for a long time, that was one of my favorite shows of all time, you know? And there's shows that are a balance. There are shows that, like I say, I mean, we see this, and again, in comic books, but I mean, I don't see why you can't do this, but there are shows out there where it's like, yes, there's a season-long theme, but sometimes it's just one or two lines that let you know that they still haven't forgotten that storyline, that season-long storyline, but it's not the focus of the necessarily of the episode.
I think Elementary is doing that exceptionally well, actually. Elementary is the kind of show that I wouldn't normally like, because it is, it's crime of the week, procedural, done in one stories, but there's a little bit of beginning and a little bit at the end that builds the larger storyline. And that's enough for me to keep going. Because I feel like the episodes still have an order.
I feel like that's something comic books have lost a little bit. And Chris says not every episode could be every issue could be a jump on point. Maybe not everyone's a jump on point, because a jump on point suggests that there should be a clean slate. But shouldn't every single issue be accessible? So is accessible?
No, because comics have an advantage over television, because physical comics don't evaporate. If I see a cover and it's 4 of 6, chances are, if I'm in a comic book store, I can grab all those issues. They're there. They're physically there. Same thing with digital.
I think that's a very, how should I put it? A very narrow view. You're a hardcore comic book reader. So for you to say, I can grab them all there, and I would, that's different than somebody who's a casual reader who you want this to be accessible to, who's going to go, you know what, I really like that cover, let me try that, and doesn't find it accessible. And I think one of the things when we talk about jump-on points is you cannot assume that you aren't getting it to somebody who's reading his very first ever comic.
Well, I think that, I mean, in the case, same as TV has so much variety of types of shows, comics have the same. I don't think that every comic, you know, pick a random issue like number 37 of Sandman, you probably have no idea what's going on. That doesn't make Sandman a weak comic just because you can't pick up a lot of issues on their own. You know, think of East of West that we reviewed last week. I also heard the reviews for that on the Hangout on Comicosity. And read the review on Comicosity as well. And everyone agrees this book is amazing. It's fantastic, and it makes no sense. It somehow manages to do everything it needs to do in a number one without explaining anything.
Yeah.
And yet we're all fine with that. I mean,
it's well made, and it's well crafted, and it's had a great hook. What did we have so far? We had Tone. And we had the second one. Keith, you had said it.
It needs some kind of hook or tease at the end. Hook? To come back.
Well, something else that we can't forget. God damn it, it just needs to be good. It needs to be quality. If it's not a good book, if it's not a good read, it's not going to work. But if it's well written, and you can tell it's well written and well drawn, it has a much better chance of drawing you back in, even if you're not 100% pleased with the storyline or understanding it.
And I think that goes along with it. There needs to be enough quality that I can trust that in 10 issues, I trust that when I get to issue 6, say, of East of West, I'm going to have a better idea of what's happening in this book. It's all going to make sense.
Exactly.
Because I can tell the craft is there. You know, you read something like, what was that one that most of us, that I was okay on, everyone else hated, Insurgent. You read that, the craft wasn't there, and the feeling was, maybe by issue 6, this will actually have gone somewhere, but I don't trust that it's going to.
Now, what is the difference between, if we say quality is the third of the five, what is the difference between a first issue and a jump on point. I mean, I guess if it's the first issue of Wolverine, it's still a jump on point because we've known Wolverine forever. Or if it's the first issue of Peter Panzerfaust, because it's a totally new thing, it's a different. But what is there any dynamics that are different between a jump on point and a first issue that we can kind of see and quantify for people?
I think you have to establish the suspension of disbelief. The phrase suspension of disbelief actually always equated to a suspension bridge in my head. And so the way I always think of it is you set the rules of the universe. When you watch a James Bond movie, you have a range of how the laws of physics will work and how what will be believable within that universe. And you can do anything within that. People, you know, in 20 James Bond movies, the only thing that anyone ever really reacted to and went, well, that would never happen, was the invisible car.
Like that. Yeah, that was stupid.
But in the context of James Bond, there still was a line that something was stupid. You think of all you think of Moonraker, you were okay. Most you could get your head around Moonraker, but invisible car was too far. So, you know, that he drove, like that he, you know, did a loop-de-loop on an ice shelf and, you know, the explosion, like everything else that happened in that movie, you're fine.
Actually, I thought that whole damn movie was ridiculous. I thought,
you established,
this isn't, it's gone from being James Bond to being Star Wars.
But you established the rules of the universe, is what I'm saying, is if
define parameters.
It's what really bugged me on Daredevil. I was really into Mark Waid's Daredevil until they introduced Doctor Doom, and it just wrecked the book for me. And I've kind of come back to it, tried it a couple of since, and it's not that I started hating the book. It's just that you set up this book as a street level, back to basics, lighter book, and about eight issues in, you've got Doctor Doom and you've got Matt Murdock's life going to hell. That's not what you promised me.
Actually, that is a funny, because in the letters pages and the everything, that's exactly what they said was going to happen, and yet that wasn't the tone. So it still was jarring. I'll agree. But you know what? It's the same thing. It's like establish the parameters. I hate one of the things that bugs me is when I see characters that have a certain power level established, doing things that I know are beyond their power level. It takes me out of the moment. It takes me out of the book. So when they do that, that's the same thing. It's out of the parameters. And yeah, just having a villain that doesn't work, it doesn't fit with the book, can do that.
And you don't necessarily have to tell people what those parameters are, because they just get them. You think of Battlestar Galactica, the second version, the newer version of the TV show. They had a very specific parameter built into the original pitch of the show. There are no space aliens. They never had to. At no point does a character look out the window and go, man, I can't believe we're alone in the universe. Because that's not what it's about. But that was just an ingrained rule. And if halfway through the second season, they had come across a planet that had a space alien on it, it would have wrecked the whole series. Mm-hmm. Because they had established what this was going to feel like. And it's not about plot. It's about what will rattle you as a viewer in a bad way.
So in other words... Oh, go ahead, Chris.
Just because I remember specifically as a kid with the original Battlestar Galactica, when aliens showed up at a casino, I remember as a kid calling bullshit on that.
Absolutely.
I remember being physically upset that my favorite show had derailed. And I love aliens, until Keith Story explained it to me, I mean, we're talking different shows, but they're both called Battlestar Galactica. Yeah, the tone does set a certain Expectation.
I'll give another example. We're talking Battlestar Galactica. Let's go to another famous sci-fi book series here. We talk Star Wars. We knew what the Force was from the first, from episodes 4, 5, and 6. When in episode 1, they said this thing, what was it, midichlorians or whatever?
Yeah, this was, it was very jarring for people to have a spiritual, mystical explanation in 4 to 6 and a scientific explanation in 1 to 3. And that's really like where the author was at two very different times in his life.
Yes.
But again, if Star Trek, on the other hand, always got themselves screwed up if they went the other direction. Because Star Trek was so science-based, when they tried to get mystical and mythical, it always was clunky. Because, again, the rules of the universe that you've established don't make it work.
Really, the difference between Star Trek Insurrection and First Contact, same director, same writers, two vastly different directions, and one movie is loved and one movie is hated.
So that's it. Understand the parameters of the universe and stick to it. It is important for a jump-on point. And I think it is, because a jump-on point can include characters you're familiar with. So if you go outside of these parameters, I guess that's what I came back to. I guess this is a better way of saying the same thing when I was saying when I want a character that's somewhat consistent. A character can have evolved and gone through it, but the universe itself, the parameters of the universe itself, I can't be screwed with.
But I think if you do something like Iron Fist in space, you better really work this out in the first issue to make me buy into it.
Well, it's the same thing. You know what? I'll take Iron Fist against a lot of enemies. I'll take Iron Fist against Red Skull, even though that's not his enemy. I'd be like, yeah, sure. Iron Fist versus Thanos, I'm just never going to buy. It just doesn't make sense.
And I think I think particularly when you're dealing with familiar characters, look at the two launches of Wolverine, the Savage Wolverine, and is it just called Wolverine, the Alan Davis one?
I think so, yeah.
Without an adjective. Very different books, very different feels.
But I think
both of them established...
Wasn't that long ago also, Keith? It wasn't that long ago also that we had the Max version, which again was different, right?
And I think that when I think of those three, the one I enjoyed the least was the Max by far, because I didn't understand who this character was. Mm-hmm. And it's a familiar character. You need to... Like when you've got a character that's been as varied as Wolverine, that he's the vicious killer, or he's learned his lessons now and he's trying to carry the torch, you have to tell me in the first issue which version I'm getting. And Batman's the same way.
Well, I think when they're doing this, they have to understand there's a difference between evolving a character and reinventing a character. Well, that's four. Can we come up with a fifth?
Well, I think letting people know you have a jump-on point.
I don't think so, Chris, because I think the same thing. I think everything should be accessible. I mean, I suppose marketing, I can understand what you're saying there. But even if you're saying a big event, you don't have to necessarily put it as a jump-on point. People might try it anyways. How about this? How about a decent price point for an issue that's – or does that come back down to marketing? It's all the same idea.
Oh, it'd be nice if every jump on point was like 99 cents or $1.99 or something. I don't know if it's really feasible. It always tends to be the opposite because so many people sample at a first issue that you raise the price of the first issue. Perhaps we should get into WeViews and maybe this elusive fifth one will come to us since we.
You know what it might be, because we have a few jump on points in the WeViews. Mm-hmm. So why don't we do that now, Keith? Because it's time for the WeViews. We're gonna have a comic book. Chris's comic book attraction this week?
That we did in honor of Age of Ultron. I decided to rewatch Avengers Next, Heroes Reborn. And it's my favorite of the Marvel animated movies.
All right, well, let's jump to that. We'll come back.
All right, we're back with another Comic Book Attractions, the part of the show where I remind you of comic book related films, good and bad, old and new, that should be seen and enjoyed for what they are. This week, in celebration of Age of Ultron, I decided to look back at a similarly themed comic book movie. I refer to, of course, as Avengers Next, Heroes of Tomorrow. And this was part of the Lionsgate Marvel direct-to-DVD animated movies. Marvel has never quite done the direct-to-DVD animated movie quite as well as DC. DC really has a formula that works. But I think this is the exception. This one, for me, hits on all accounts. I really like it. I know Brett has mentioned on the podcast a couple times he really doesn't like it, but for me, this harkens back to an earlier time in my life, or not this movie specifically. It reminds me of an earlier time in my life, and this is what I wanted. This reminds me of a time when I didn't know every comic book character, and it introduced me some, where innocence in a character was a redeemable factor. It reminded me of the first comic book series I ever fell in love with, Secret Wars, when I could read Power Pack without a hint of irony. I really like this movie, if you can't tell. This film takes place several years in the future of the Marvel Universe and stars the children of the Avengers. The geek in me loves seeing the pairings that produce children, the children that star in this film. I love seeing characters I know and the qualities that they've passed on their children. It is never quite explained what happened to the Avengers, or actually that's sort of the point of the film, as the children find out what happened to their parents and how they can define themselves as heroes. I find this fascinating. In addition to the new characters that are introduced that have familiar ties, we also have old characters, such as Iron Man, who is forced to raise the children of Avengers for undefined reasons, well, at the beginning of the film anyway. And we get to see a Tony Stark that we all know and love, but several years older, and has been forced to become a father figure. I find exploring that in an animated movie fascinating. We also have what I actually think of as the definitive Hulk. I love where the Hulk has evolved to and how his madness has taken over the character and how he hides from the world. I love that. Add in ominous villain. This is how Ultron should be portrayed. I really hate when Ultron shows up in the comic books, because most often he's dismissed in an issue or two, when really he is one of the heavy hitters. I'm personally of the belief if Ultron shows up, it's a mind-blowing event. It should incorporate the entire universe, which is what I kind of like about Age of Ultron right now, is that it is big. Sure, we're having editorial problems there, I think, but at the same time, if there was any character that needed a crossover to resolve his conflicts with the rest of the Marvel Universe, Ultron is the key. Characters on this in this are powerful. And these Avengers children, they are in jeopardy. I feel a real sense of somebody could die. There's a weight to the storytelling here that I think is really beyond average children's entertainment. A lot of these Marvel animated movies, I think, have really delved into the source material and not always to a positive effect. This Avengers Next is original. They're not drawing on a predetermined storyline. There aren't panels that we have to see or scenes we have to see. This is new, and I think it's fresher because of it.
What is this?
These are our parents.
Your parents were Avengers?
We're all that's left of their legacy.
They are the children of Earth's mightiest heroes.
I raised you all, hopefully, as your parents would have wanted. So I kept you hidden. And I kept the truth from you.
Ultron killed our parents!
He'll never stop hunting us.
Ultron will be coming for us now.
This is bad. This is really bad.
Superhuman variable cannot be permitted.
That's not fair. James doesn't even have any power.
Commencing termination.
We owe it to our parents.
Today we meet our destinies.
She means that in a good way, right?
Now, the call goes out to a new generation of heroes.
Whether you know it or not, you've prepared for this all your lives.
Avengers, assemble!
The children of Captain America and Black Widow, Thor, Black Panther, Hawkeye, Giant Man and Wasp must join forces with Iron Man and the Hulk.
Hulk smash!
To become the next Avengers. The next epic movie from Marvel Animated Features.
Tell me she didn't just do that.
Are you up for a little Avenger?
Next Avengers, Heroes of Tomorrow. Coming to DVD and Blu-ray September 2nd.
Hulk is strongest there is!
Uh-oh. What do you mean, uh-oh?
I may have let that trailer run a little bit long, but I just love the Hulk yelling, Hulk is strongest there is. It just, I just love that phrase, and I just love the way that the Hulk says it. If you're looking for something to introduce people to the Marvel Universe, I don't think you could really do better. It has a nostalgia factor for the old characters that gets you excited about the Marvel Universe. At the same time, because the majority of the action takes place with new characters, you don't have all that baggage. It's there. It's connected to something larger. But really, you don't need to know that. And makes you want to learn where these characters come from. Anyway, that's it for me. Definitely check this movie out. I truly enjoyed it. It's on Netflix and available at very reasonable rates on DVD on most stores. Really, seek this one out. Chris, O-U-T.
And back we are.
Here I come to save the day.
Now it's time for We Views, because Keith, we are
saving you from bad comics.
Damn straight. You know, I just want to say this because I'm reading Superior Spider-Man, and all of a sudden I pick up a Superior Spider-Man, and it's right in the middle of Age of Ultron, and it makes no sense with the Age of Ultron number one I read.
I wish you would ask me.
That's the opposite of a jump on point.
I wish you would ask me.
I'm just like, holy crap. I read issue one of Age of Ultron, And now all of a sudden, Age of Ultron, it's Peter Parker, the Peter Parker I know. Whereas in Superior Spider-Man, it's obviously the Doc Ock. And it's like,
that's because so is this happening in our time? Or is they're it, lying. It's like such a mess. They're just flat out lying now. Because they are now claiming that, of course, he's Doc Ock in the Age of Ultron. That it has absolutely no relation to the characterization that you've seen of Doc Ock. Please ignore that. Because honest, it really is. And when you read Superior crap. Spider-Man AU, you'll understand in that it's totally different than anything you've seen. No, I shouldn't review because I didn't read it intentionally, because only one of the AU tie-ins is written by the regular writer of the book. Which to me,
like, but this was written by the guy who's been writing Avenging Spider-Man, which was in many ways actually better.
That was like the red light, awooga, awooga, stay away from this stuff.
Like, yeah, this was bad. The opposite of a jump on point.
Fraction is the only writer of the regular book who's writing the AU book for those titles, which to me is like the absolute giantest sign that you should just skip these things.
A mess. All right, let's move on to the actual Wii views. Chris, why don't you open up? What book do you want to open with?
Let's go with my favorite company, Monkey Break Comics, Knuckleheads. This is a digital-only comic book. And I will have the artist in a second.
It's written by Brian Winkler, art by Robert Wilson IV.
Okay, and this is simply, what if a slob, lazy character found the Green Lantern ring and was forced to, or felt a need to, be a superhero? I have to say, this is the first of the Monkey Brain comic books that I've read the first issue and said, you know what? I don't care about anybody in this book. Their witticisms aren't as funny as they should be for a book like this, and I'm just, even for 99 cents, I'm not in for a second issue.
Keith.
This is pretty rough. The art is really substandard. The book might have worked in black and white, but the coloring is so pastel-y that it just didn't work for me. And there's some terrible, terrible dialogue in this book. It's pretty cliched. It's, you know, it's the guy who gets superpowers and wants to just stay sitting on the couch. It's a twist in that you've seen it, this exact same twist, hundreds of times. And he'll learn an important lesson by the second issue, which I won't read.
I liked it. See, I think it was fun. This book was originally published, I think, like 2008 or maybe it was 2010. It was certainly a while ago, as a black and white, story, and then it disappeared. And it's back now for this 12-issue run with Monkey Brain, and I think it's a lot of fun. It made me laugh. I like the lead character, because he's just such a dick, and I like it. And somehow I like the idea that he's sitting there, and he's ordered pizza, and it's time to go save the world, but first he's like, just give me a slice. And then he's sitting there, and he goes to save the chick, and then he sees that the monster is really, really big, so he runs away instead. And so somebody goes, that chick's really hot, and then that changes his mind. It's like, I get it. I'm shallow like that too. So I understand. I like the fact that this is a book where we have a character who's going to be in all 12 issues, whose name is Pizza Guy, and another character who's going to be in all 12 issues, whose name is Drunk British Chick. I mean, come on. That's good stuff for me. Chris, why don't we continue going around the horn with you? It'll keep it easy since there's just three of us. And
I did the first one.
I know. And now you can do this one.
Okay, let's go with Thanos Rising. Marvel's new offer. I believe this is written by Bendis, but I don't have any of this crap in front of me, so I don't know.
Jason Aaron?
Jason Aaron, yes.
Art by...
Yes, with art by Bianchi? Simon Bianchi. Simone Bianchi?
Simone Bianchi would be my...
Yes, Simone, you're right. Simone Bianchi.
This is a gorgeous book. I love the art. I actually enjoyed the story. I got a huge problem. Thanos is one of those characters that I don't want an origin for.
Well, he has an origin before.
We've always had an origin for Thanos. Yeah.
I don't need a step-by-step origin before. I just like having this crazy guy who worships death.
He hasn't been that character for a while.
Yeah, but he's evolved out of that character, and I think there are still elements of that character there. I just don't see a need for a limited series to go back and explain why Thanos is the way he is. I much rather having the options of Thanos' wacky relative from some place we've never heard of just showing up, and all of a sudden there's this huge backstory that we don't really need to know. I just like Thanos. I don't need to see Thanos as a baby. I don't need to know that he was unpopular as a child. His acne. I have no need of knowing any of that crap. It's just like Wolverine. Wolverine, for me, in a lot of ways, died as soon as they told me the origin.
Yeah.
I'm a huge fan of the Killing Joke, but in my mind, for the Joker, that origin, which in the Killing Joke is never actually said, it is the definitive that the character of the Red Hood is becomes the Joker. It is implied, but it never specifically says.
That's the key why it works. You just nailed it.
That's why that one works. Unfortunately, that's sort of been written into continuity now that the Joker was the Red Hood. But I'm getting off point. I don't need to know any of this stuff. I think it's a well-written book. And if I didn't have a back history with Thanos, I think I'd love this book. But as it is, this is a story I don't want told, so I'm not reading anymore.
I thought this book was awesome. I get where you're coming from, Chris. It is a bit of maybe it could be called Thanos Justified. there is a bit of he was pushed around as a kid, and that's why he wants to destroy the universe. But this book to me fits really well with a few books that Marvel has done over the past few years, Magneto Testament. And the Red Skull miniseries from a couple of years back that are telling, and Brubaker's Books of Doom as well, which I just read because I got that number one for free on the Marvel giveaway thing. These are books that a good villain is not just evil. A good villain thinks that they're doing the right thing. The best villains are the ones that can justify to themselves what they're doing. And that's who Thanos is. That's who the Red Skull is. I mean, the Red Skull is a horrible, like, villainous, baddie guy who thinks he's doing the right thing. And Dr. Doom was, like, that's why Dr. Doom is to me one of the greatest villains of all time, is that he is always 100% sure that he's doing the right thing. He can justify absolutely everything he does. And I think that this book's interesting to me because there has been an origin for Thanos I don't know very well. And for the parts of Thanos' origin that we do know don't actually fit together that well, because why did someone not just drown this kid in a river? if they knew so early that he was so evil. And that's what we get in this book, is that amazing scene with his mom, where the first time his mother looks at him, she goes, "We got to kill him." you could just see it. We have to go there. Okay, Mo's shaking his head. I'm dying to know. We don't have Brett here to be the uber pro Marvel guy. I'm the uber pro DC guy. Mo's usually got enough pessimism for both companies, but this is his all time favorite character. So I'm incredibly interested to find out what Mo thought of this book.
Certainly my all-time favorite villain, and I've listed this before. Look, at the end of the day, some characters, no matter who else gets a hold of them, only one creator, the creator who knows them and understands them inside and out, is capable of doing them well. And I think Thanos falls under that category. Jim Starlin has done so much brilliant stuff. One of the things that's the key about Thanos is that he is utterly evil. You sort of understand him, but you never really get to know him. And that's a key, because he's evil. He has a good side, but you don't really know why he's evil. It's like Mike Myers. Okay, let's go back to the Halloween movies. What's better, John Carpenter, this character is just evil, or we get an origin from Rob Zombie? Well, universally, people will say that the original is better. That character is more mystifying, more terrifying, and that's what we're getting here. We're getting two somehow in giving us more Thanos. You're giving us less Thanos because you're making it less interesting. Thanos himself now isn't evil right from the child. I mean, yes, his mother thinks he is, but I just assume that's because he's ugly. Like, honest to God, there's somebody manipulating him. Nobody freaking manipulates Thanos. Thanos manipulates other people. It just doesn't make any sense. This is, in the hands of Starlin, an origin story for Thanos would be brilliant because he's brilliant and he gets him. Just like Elektra was only ever gotten by Frank Miller. But yeah, no, give me the 1978 Halloween. Don't give me the 2005. Don't give me the origin of Michael Myers. Don't give me the origin of Thanos. Does that make sense, Keith?
Yeah, I understand. I think that Halloween is a good example because, yeah, by over-justifying the character, by rationalizing the character, and that's why I said it does feel like Thanos justified. It is.
It does. One of the things about Thanos, like I said, he's intriguing because you don't really, like, you understand him, but you don't know him. You'll never know him. And that's very much the key to the character. Chris, moving on.
All right. Next up, we have Polarity from the Boom Studios, created and written by Max Bemis and art by, and I'm going to screw this one up,
Jorge Coelho. Coelho.
I'm glad you were here for me because I would have never gotten through that. Wow. You know what? I really liked the first half of this book. It was sort of a man coming to grips with mental illness. I found the story interesting right up until the swerve. Normally, I'm a huge fan of the swerve at end of a comic book that locks me in for the rest of the series.
Yeah, we talked about it in Jump On Point. That's what the hook is, one of the things you need.
Yeah. It has it. But I was actually engaged in the story they were telling right up until that point where the tone seemed to change. In the last couple of pages, it's like, oh, I thought we were going here. I was interested in going to that place. Unfortunately, the swerve happens. It's, oh, we're going someplace else. And I found it just too abrupt. I wanted more of the same, and they gave me something completely different. I thought I was going to get a character study, something interesting, a man dealing with inner turmoil, and that's not what I'm getting.
I'm mostly with Chris on this one, actually. I found the last couple of pages of this book really jarring and not necessarily in a good way. I reviewed this on Twitter in a couple of words as it feels like a 1990s Vertigo book. From the art to the storytelling style to the subject matter, it feels like an old Vertigo book. What it teases at the end, I don't know if I actually want to read. And that's so it does the opposite of what a good tease should do. Instead of opening up the whole world to me for where the story could go, it actually felt like it closed off a whole bunch of the world. I may try a second issue. Probably what I'm going to do is shelf read it, the first half of the second issue, until I get a feel for whether this is just another superhero book or whether it is what the first, 18 or whatever pages promises to be. So I'm pretty torn on this one about whether I will continue or not.
Yeah, I had a really tough time with this book too. Boy, I mean, for one thing, I really love the art. I think the art is interesting and original and really well done. Big fan. This book didn't feel like something that should be published by Boom. I could see it at Vertigo. I could certainly see it at Dark Horse or Image, or even as an independent book, even at Oni. It didn't feel like something I've typically seen out of Boom. I don't know if that's necessarily a bad thing. It really ultimately, jarring is the best word. I mean, I do think that this is going to be more of what we got in the first 20 pages of this book. I don't think it's just another superhero book. But on the other hand, instead of making me hooked, this left me with a perplexed feeling when it came to the end and not really comfortable with it. I'm like, let's put it this way. There was a certain beauty to the character study of this that the final image kind of seems to piss on, for lack of a better way to put it, to me. So I think I'm done. I think, unfortunately, I'm done. Chris, let's move on.
All right. Now for the only DC book of the week, Batwing. Number 19. This is a new jump on point. This is introducing, or teases to introduce, a new Batman, part of the WTF line from DC books.
Batman.
Oops. Batwing.
He's a Batman. I mean, he's part of Batman Incorporated. Yes.
That's true.
And of course, this is by this Uber team of Pimiotti and Gray. And
Palmiotti. That was pretty
close. Palmiotti? you did that too.
Pimento and Gray. Pimento and Gray. Keep going.
All right.
Eduardo Pensica doing the pencils. Julio Ferreira doing the inking. Man, seems like a lot of Spanish dudes and working in comics this month.
Yeah. I really like this issue.
So we're not good at Spanish.
Yeah.
No habit.
I really like this book. One of my big problems when we do a major character renovation or identity change is, I think a lot of the times the original character gets completely lost. We don't get a goodbye. It just, by the way, we got a new Flash. We actually spend a lot of time, or some time, with the original Batwing. They clean up the pieces. They put the pieces back in the box. And then they start introducing new pieces that they're going to play with.
Well, they had to spend some time with the last guy, Chris, didn't they? Because they hadn't wrapped up this storylines, right?
Yeah, but that's never stopped DC before from going, okay.
Good point.
No, they spent some time. I mean, this is a definitely number 19 issue rather than a new number one. And I actually feel that fans of the Batwing would not feel ripped off that there's this huge swerve. They put the pieces back in the box, and the only negative thing I actually have about the book is the big surprise of the new Batwing is sort of who cares.
Well, you can say who it is now. Here it comes, yeah, folks.
It's Luke Fox, Lucien Fox's son.
Has he ever been seen before?
No, I think what they I'm not a reader of Batwing, so I can't actually say for sure. I don't think he's ever been.
He's not from Batwing. No, I was just I was going to look up the character actually while you're at it.
Okay.
Because I'm not familiar with him, so I'm not sure if he's appeared before or not.
Well, everybody knows Lucien Fox. That's his, Lucius, you know. Yeah. Lucius, yeah.
No, I quite like the book. I'm interested in seeing the direction. Am I going to continue? It's still Batwing. That would make it my second Bat title, I believe. And I don't want Batwing to be my second Bat title. So, yeah, I'm not investing in the Batman universe right now. So,
jeez, nope. You're only getting one Batman. But there's like,
that's one more than me.
I love Batman. I just haven't fell in love with. Well, do you count Talon? I'm getting Talon.
You get the Legends of the Dark Knight digital only.
Yeah, that's the one I was counting, but I also get Talon.
I would count Talon.
All right, so while we're waiting for Keith Mo, why don't you give your review?
Well, Keith looks like he's done that.
It is a new character.
I thought so.
I will say that my comicosity odds that I gave, this was the safest bet on that list, was a new character with a familiar tie, which is what Talon was. That it was Talon was tied into the other into the Night of the Owls, but it was a brand new character. This is kind of what I expected. I didn't really expect it to be Alfred. I mean, I hoped, but. And there was a page in the book where I had a moment of, hey, maybe it is Alfred. there is a page where like, oh, there is this chance that it's. I think the reveal reads better than if you just hear it. I talked to a couple of people on Twitter who, you know, really were taken aback by this as, you know, bait and switch. I think being told who it was would definitely not work for you. I enjoyed it. I'm curious enough to try another issue. It would have been better if it had been someone who had appeared somewhere before. I was kind of saying that, you know, it's not going to be Cass or Steph or someone because they haven't appeared in New 52. Well, it's not someone that's appeared in New 52 anyway. So I guess that's neither here nor there. So as far as a reveal goes, it's not the biggest splash it could be. At least it ties to something from a film, so it's got a bit more cachet that way. It ties into something familiar. Story-wise, it had a lot to wrap up of previous stuff, which was kind of clunky for me because I'd only read number one and number zero of Batwing. So I don't care about what you're wrapping up. Nice that you've got your farewell story, but really I paid $3 for like 5 pages of story in the end. Little,
but was it good? Were those first whatever
it was,
pages?
I thought overall it was a well crafted book. I mean, it sent off the character without hustling them off in a couple of pages. The chunk at the end of we've got a new design. They explain the costume. They tell you who it's going to be, and then next issue we'll get the big first adventure or whatever. So it's more of a less of a jump on point and more of like a transitional issue to get you from one to the other. So I am intrigued enough to come back for the next issue.
I like that transitional issue more than a jump on point. Though, I mean, I think as a jump on point, it worked. I mean, remember how I complained about Guardians of the Galaxy that not much really happens, and they could have told that in 5 pages? I mean, they told more story in the last 5 pages than that entire Guardians of the Galaxy told. And this is kind of what my point is. This had a lot of story to it. I mean, this had a lot happen. I don't know if I 100% understand why the old Batwing character is giving up the actual costume, because it seemed to me like things were going good for him as in his efforts to clean up his world, and then all of a sudden he's just like, yeah, it's not working out, and he just walks away. So I don't know if I understand that 100%, but like, this is a lot of story, and I appreciated that. This, and unlike Guardians of the Galaxy, a lot happens here, and like I say, the proof that you could have done that entire issue to me in 5 issues, in fact, I think it's only like two pages that we actually get, 3 pages maybe if you include this kind of, you know, the one panel page at the end of this new Luke Fox character, and yet they do a good enough job in 3 pages of letting me know who he is and why he is and why he wants to be part of Batman Inc. to let me to have me interested in him. I feel like I know the character, or at least the basis of the character's personality. He's an overachiever.
It's actually only 3 pages, Mo.
Yeah, it is only 3 pages, yeah. Including the splash at the end, right?
Yeah.
Yep. Yeah, and yet they gave us me more than they did. No, seriously, I mean, and yet I know that he is an overachiever, that he is a smart student, that he has gone into MMA fighting and gone against his father's wishes in order to master those skills and in order to impress Batman. I know this from 2 pages of storyline. Like, that's more character development than it usually get. And again, a lot happens in this. I really appreciated that. And the new Batwing costume looks exactly like Batman Beyond, except for the red. It's not a red bat symbol. It's a kind of, you know, like I say, kind of like a flashy light thing. I don't know what you call it. Kind of fluorescent thing. But yeah, no, it's a really, I would best describe this as a workmanlike issue. Workmanlike from Palmiotti and Gray, as well as the artists. It was a very workmanlike, solid issue. I won't be back. No, seriously, it's like, yeah, okay, it's pretty, it's good. It's workmanlike. It's not special. And, you know, and the thing is, when you introduce the character, it's like, oh, okay, he's the son of somebody I know and like. Well, I don't dislike him, but it's not the same excitement as a, you know, having a character that's like, oh, he's back. Thank God, I really wanted him. It doesn't have that. It lacks that oomph. So, it's solid, though. Last book, Chris.
Actually, I'm going to throw this one back to you because you're the valiant guy, and I really want to know your opinion.
Actually, I really wanted to know your opinion as non-valiant guys. For me, obviously, this is... I mean, I understand exactly everything that's going on. There are new characters introduced in this, but these characters, I think, does a good job introducing it, and to me, it fits in the universe. But basically, what we're talking about here is Harbinger Wars by Joshua Dysart and Dwan Swierczynski. And now I know why you wanted me to do it, because you didn't want to say that.
I'm fairly conflicted about the book, which is why I threw it back to you.
Clayton Crane and Clayton Henry, who I'm a big fan of Clayton Henry, do the artwork in this one. I think that this is a book that I don't think it will read as good for you guys as for me, and I think that's a fail. I mean, for me, this is a fantastic book, and it is a setup issue, totally. Very little happens. It sets the stage for you. Okay, now you know who Bloodshot is. He's a guy who was screwed with, who hunted down all these children, who now is protecting them and wants to save them. Toyo Harada is a man who is pretending to be good, who's really manipulating in the backstory, all these children, that he wants them for the power. And then Project Rising Spirit, who is basically the evil corporation who is out there seeing these children as tools that they're willing to kill, that they, because of their powers, that they are happy to manipulate because it gives them power. So you have the three different sides being set up for the future issues in the war. Like I say, for me, it totally makes sense. I got all that. I don't know that you guys got all that. And that may be the fail of the book. So if you're a regular Valiant reader, if you've been reading Harbinger and Bloodshot, you're like, this is awesome. This is a 9.5 out of 10, or 9 out of 10 probably. If you're you guys, I think it's probably significantly less. And for that reason, I can't give it as high a review because it's supposed to be a jump on point as well. I'm not sure if it succeeded, but I guess I'll have to hear your reviews first. So please, Chris, go ahead.
Yeah, no, I'm taking the reins back here. And one of the reasons I threw to you is I truly, really enjoyed the art. And I really kind of associated with what I assume are new characters of the kids with the implant in the brain that explodes after an hour.
Those are the new characters, yeah.
Those are the new characters?
Those are the first time those characters show up.
I fall in love with them. I love every page they're on. And then any page with Bloodshot in it or the Harbinger team. I've only read issue one, so I'm not even sure who the Harbinger team is.
Well, you
I
have to
make sure completely lost.
Flamingo, Torque, Zypher.
Oh, I know who they are. I just yeah. don't know whether they call them Harbinger. Like, I don't know what they call the team. Okay. So
yeah.
Any character I recognized from Valiant in the 90s. I hated, and every character that was new or introduced in this issue, I really enjoyed. So,
wasn't there only two characters that you knew?
Well, I knew the Harbingers. The villain in the original series was
Harada, and then
I knew him.
Those two.
Well, and Bloodshot.
Yeah, that's two. Those two.
Well. There were several characters. They're just two.
But the Harbinger characters are different.
No, they. I mean, you still had Flamingo. Flamingo and Zephyr. I knew their names. That's all I knew. Okay, and I didn't think they gave them a good introduction here. I had no idea what was going on other than the new introduction, so...
Yeah.
I'm not continuing. I will. It's a high enough quality book that, I mean, you guys, people like yourselves have recommended the entire Valiant universe. And I've been meaning to actually pick up some trades and catch up, but I haven't done that yet. And this wasn't a good place to start.
No, it really ties in so well together, Chris, with everything they've done. But I think it was I think there were so many characters and so much going on that how can you possibly absorb it all if you're coming onto this as your jump on point? I think that was kind of my worry. Keith, maybe you can give us your final thoughts on it.
I'm actually halfway between because I have kept up on Bloodshot. I really like that book, but I haven't read any more issues of Harbinger. So I actually spent the entire book thinking that the Harbinger characters were the other characters.
Yeah.
I thought that all the little kid characters were the Harbinger characters because I haven't followed
that book.
And then like these other four annoying characters turn up and I'm like, what's this guy, are these guys about? Like you kind of derailed the story. They're out in the middle of the desert. I don't know what's up with these guys. I actually was completely looking at the wrong characters as like the key characters in this book. Because I'm following Bloodshot, I spent the whole book waiting for Bloodshot to turn up, which is pretty late in the book. I enjoyed it.
I found it really cool when he turned up.
I like the character a lot. I like this version of Bloodshot. Yeah. I like what they're doing with him.
Yeah.
So I am intrigued because I think that this is tying into what's happening in his book. It is like the old days when you read a crossover book for the character that you followed, and you'd almost do a little checklist of, well, they're on page 9, 12, and then 14 through 20. And that's kind of what it was for me, because I wanted to read this for Bloodshot. I want to know what Bloodshot's part in this whole thing is. And I enjoyed the kids. Like, I thought they were interesting characters. I was lacking a bit because I didn't know anything of what's going on with Harbinger. I'd say maybe it's like an 8, like, because I enjoyed it, but it didn't have everything that that I needed.
I don't think it was as successful as it could have been. I think it's great for me, but not as good. Now, I will say, I hope you guys actually give the next issue a shot, even though Chris said he wouldn't. But I hope that you do, because that's where the action is going to take place. This was setting the stage of the characters, so you kind of know who they are. And you know that it's a three-way war. There's three different – there's a person who appears to be good and isn't. There's somebody who's totally evil. There's somebody who's good. And that this is kind of setting the stage for these three characters to collide, these three different viewpoints to collide. And even then, a Harada is like that Dr. Doom. He believes what he's doing was right, but he's very wrong. So, I mean, I hope that this is, like I said, I think if you stick with it, the next issue, you're going to get a lot of action and some more characterization. I think it'll really pay off. But that said, if you're not invested in, you know. All right, let's get out. It's getting late here. I mean, I still got comics to read and porn to watch, so we really should get going. So let's get the hell out of here. I am Mo_WeTalk on Twitter. Any questions, comments, opinions, disagreements, thoughts of ways to improve, like getting rid of Keith, we understand. Or maybe it's just Brett. He was the one who was slowing us down, right? You can reach us comics@wetalkpodcast.com. And, of course, thanks to Comicosity, our friends at Comic Book Therapy, and Comic Pack Podcast Network. Chris?
I'm Chris_WeTalk on Twitter. Send us a show if you just want to talk comic books. There's always one of us on Twitter, it seems. Usually Keith. He spends 24 hours there.
Keith loves his Twitter.
I do. If you have suggestions on movies I should watch for comic book attractions, please send them to me. Make them good movies, because I've had a bad run of it. Actually, tonight's feature wasn't bad, but moving along, Keith.
All right. You can follow me on Twitter at CubReporterK. And I just want to say, Christopher, the Red Hood, secret identity of the Joker and part of his origin story, was established in the comic The Man Behind the Red Hood in February 1951. So not an invention of the Killing Joke. And that's it.
Yeah. If you want to get technical, Jack Napier, we could go that direction too. You know what I was saying.
I get what you're saying. All right, guys. Best show ever. No Brett. Or OUT.